Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 110, the season 5 finale. Cannot believe that we are here. And I'm so excited to have Amanda Rivera back on the show, who has been editing the podcast in the background, here to help me recap. What have you been doing, Amanda, besides being a fellow director at Tabletop Gamers?
Well, definitely that. We have an exciting year ahead because it's our 10-year anniversary, which is an amazing milestone for the organization. We have a couple of surprises that I think we're going to touch on later, which will be really exciting to tell you all about. Also, I'm excited to say that I joined Unpub as a member of the advisory board, which my favorite part of pretty much every convention I go to is sitting in the Unpub area, playtesting games and just chatting with everybody. So I'm excited to get involved in some of those projects too.
I'm so excited that you jumped on Unpub because I left the board, but I'm kind of more advisory-esque. You're going to do a great job. I'm super pumped to have you a part of that organization since I already know I love having you a part of Tabletop Gamers, even though you were there before me.
Nonprofit twins, as we say.
Twinsies! Oh, I love that for us. I'm so excited to start recapping this episode, though. So let's move on. Okay, so everyone knows that when we do this recap, I always have the other person take over as host. So Amanda, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. You are now running this episode.
All right, let's do it. Season 5 ran for 22 episodes, including this episode last year, starting May 21st, with Seppi Yoon's Conquest Princess, Fashion is Power, all the way up to the last episode with Ian Clayman's Survivor, The Tribe Has Spoken. Tell me your thoughts on season 5 as a whole.
This is a great season. I feel like we had a lot of diverse guests as well as games, starting with the first one, queer power and kind of more heavy gameplay versus a game based off the show Survivor that my family grew up watching. And I sadly had to work while they had their little parties. It was very fun just talking to different people and also how I found some of the guests between meeting them in person at conventions or random gaming events in cities I was visiting or just introducing themselves online or through another person. It was awesome. And then to finally have Phil Walker Harding on the show when I kept saying, oh, this is the person I've always wanted to come on the show and interview him, to have him be our 100th episode, which still blows my freaking mind that we hit 100 and now we're past 100.
Yeah, 100 episodes. First off, congratulations again. That was super exciting. I didn't even realize because when I heard about the podcast and I started listening to it, I'm not a huge podcast person to be honest. So like picking and choosing the ones I wanted to listen to based on games I knew or designers I knew or recommendations. 100 episodes is a lot of episodes. It's gone pretty quick, but it's really cool because like you said, diverse season, a lot of really cool people, some like superstars in there. Everyone's really a superstar. But I also grew up in a Survivor family, fun fact.
Oh, no way.
Most of my family still watches it. Yeah, I do not. But there's something to be said about some of the things they do that are interesting. And I feel like if you know, you know. But yeah, a lot of really great people on the season. I always love the little asides when you talk about how you met, because sometimes it is like a convention, but sometimes it's something else or somebody that you've known for a really long time or before you started really getting into it. It's always interesting to get those little anecdotes. I guess overall, like what were some highlights from the episodes that you can recall?
It's so crazy to think we had 21 different games on this, but some of the things that really like went into my brain. The first one is probably the episode for Exploding Kittens, Good versus Evil with Carol Mertz. It's not necessarily the game because like, yes, Exploding Kittens is cool. And it was cool seeing like how she got to work with
not only a brand of Exploding Kittens and the gameplay that's already there, but also take from like other different versions and combine it with what was about to happen with the TV show, which is actually not that bad on Netflix. If you are a gamer and you like kind of adult cartoons, I did binge watch it. I was a fan, so maybe check it out. But more so like her design style and just the things she thinks about as far as like accessibility and her coming from video games, but also like talking about making that couch where you use like your butt basically like Twister, like you're like hitting things. It's just like so interesting to me, the design space that she worked in and the conversations we had. That is probably the one that pops in my brain the most when I think of this season. I don't know if you remember much of that one, but it puts a smile on my face.
For me, that episode specifically made games sound more like experiences. Like the way she thinks of design and the way she went about a lot of her projects were creating games as experiences. So using your body, doing something different, talking about bringing that game, like how it became the show and stuff was really cool. There were a lot of different types of things happening. Like games are no longer just games. They've like kind of transcended into different forms of media or different types of things. And the couch was wild. I actually went on her website after and like looked it up because I needed to see
That
looked like. I did, yeah.
That's so cool.
There was a couple other cool things she did. So just basically somebody who thinks about games in these very, very different ways was just interesting. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, I would go look at some of her other stuff.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And honestly, like Carol's conversation brings me back to why I started this podcast. Like it was to passively learn from other designers, whether they're new or established, just like how they think. And it just makes me a better designer personally. And I love hearing about the different games, but I really just love the stories that come from these designers and like how some people approach design. And her brain is fascinating. I very much enjoyed getting to know her and meet her like through the year. And hopefully we'll continue to actually be real friends. So that was a huge highlight. And then another awesome woman who gave some really cool advice was Ellie Dix in the episode for A Midsummer Night's Fair. I've always wanted a game signed with Game Right, so first off, jealous, but she has been kicking butt and getting all the games signed. But the thing that I took from her episode was her advice to designers to go in expecting a no. Because so many people hope for that yes, but really, I can tell you, I do a lot of pitching. So like, for instance, for the show Gamma Expo / Toy Fair, I sent out 25 emails in one night to hopefully get like maybe 5 actual pitches. Hopefully it'll be more, but like really it is a numbers game of you send out a bunch of emails, you hope to get a few pitches, and maybe of those pitches, so I have a pitch deck with like almost 20 games, of those 20 games, maybe 1 or 2 will tickle their fancy enough to actually play the game. And then possibly, maybe, will one get actually signed. It is a numbers game. I joke, I am a master of rejection. Hearing from someone who's just like, hey, go in expecting the no, but like, it's great if it changes, was really nice to hear. And also her talking about how when she was making this game, she had this component that she loved, but she like had to kind of kill her darling. I think it was just a good reminder of, as a designer, sometimes you might think you have a hook of a game, but you sometimes need to let it go because it might not make sense for the product or the price point, or, you know, you're working with a publisher and it's like, sometimes you got to go with what they do. I think that was another good episode that jumps to my mind when I think of this season.
Same. I think I took away the same things you did. I can remember the game. And again, I always like to look up the game when I'm listening to the episode and editing it because it puts it into context so I can picture it. But she just seemed so down to earth and so real and just such solid advice. It was interesting because that's early in the season. And as the season went on, there were a couple people who said similar things in different words. And I'm like, huh, all these people now that are all of a sudden they became successful and they had a bunch of games at once because it seems to be this waterfall effect, right? Like you were saying. But she definitely kind of started that trend. And you can be excited and passionate about where you're doing, but you also have to be like realistic. And it's that much more exciting when it does happen then, I feel like. So it's nice that she was able to be super real with everybody on that. And the game looks really cool. So I'm excited to play it at some point.
Yeah. It's funny how you say kind of like a waterfall effect, because I thought of that when I had David on talking about Monkey Palace. I used to joke because I've known him since like the beginning of my designing digitally when I met him in 2020. He was like this guy who I knew had a crazy amount of games signed, but none of them were out. So I'm like, you are going to be the most well-known person that no one knows about once these games start dropping, because he's like, he's got Finspan, he's got the Lego game, he's got some other big ones. It's cool to see how success can come in different forms and that you are a designer, whether or not your game is out. Like that's something I try to remind people is if you have a game idea and you are testing it, like you are a designer. It doesn't matter if you end up self-publishing or signing with a company or making something on like the Game Crafter, or maybe you just make it as a gift to give to your like friends and family, because a lot of these stories come from those places. And I think it's like really cool and I like it a lot. But what's another game that you found interesting or conversation that came to your mind for this season?
Fog of Love for sure is a game that I played a couple of times and I always found super interesting. So when I saw that you were going to have Jacob on to chat about that game, I was like, oh, okay, I'm really excited about this one. I guess to say. It's so different. For me, what stood out was obviously the stories that come from that game, right? He shared a bunch of different instances of people coming to him and saying different things that they learned about themselves or other people from the game or their relationships. The way he talked about the game being something where it wasn't something designed to be a typical game where you go into it thinking about, okay, how do we win this? It was made more as like a psychological learning exercise almost. To hear somebody be like, I wanted to create something that was a tool for this, but also a game, rather than here's a game and here's how you win. Because when you experience it that way and you're trying to just win, you're not doing what it's meant to be done. And that's just the opposite way of thinking of games. So I don't know. I found that really interesting.
I agree. I really want to try playing this game again because I only played it at a convention, like I mentioned in the episode, with a person I didn't really know. And it was a guy. And it's just like, I was not feeling the love connection regardless. Like, I definitely was here to play to win, not necessarily to play to experience it. And I think that this game really shines if you are playing in the way that it was intended. Definitely check out that episode because it is a very interesting way of thinking about a game. I also just thought it was cute that even though him and his partner are no longer together, it was a game that was like made for someone. And I know that in the next season, we have an episode where we're going to be featuring a person who also made kind of a game for their partner. And I think that's kind of cool because games can come from so many places and be inspired by so many different things. And I know I personally have designed games before inspired by people I was dating or friends or like weird things that happened in my life or my animals, whatever it is. So that was pretty cool.
Forget actually writing a song for somebody. Invent a game for somebody. That'll really impress them.
Yeah, my friends have called me the Taylor Swift of board game designers. It has definitely come up once or twice before.
This does not surprise me in the slightest.
I know. Yeah. Be careful what you say around me. Friend or relationship or family, you might end up in a game. Just be warned.
You, your pet, maybe you're not sure, but one day you'll see something on a shelf and you'll be like, that looks oddly familiar. And then you'll see Danielle's name next to it and you'll wonder, oh, that's why.
Oh, yeah. I've jotted down dumb crap my family has said on vacation before. And like, I have a running list in my notes on my phone and I'm like, I'm going to do something with this someday.
Oh, stop.
Oh, yeah.
I did the same thing with my grandma. She pronounces words wrong all the time. And I'm like, I'm making a dictionary that's all words that you pronounce incorrectly one time.
There we go. We have our next game. Yeah, but I guess going back to games of this season, I said I was super excited when I had Phil on the show. So Phil Walker Harding is one of the designers that I kind of like not aspire to be, but I just feel like how he thinks and how he designs is so similar to how I do, because I very much like to streamline things and make things like very entry level and teach people basic mechanics for the first time or reuse those mechanics in like a different combination to create like a new recipe or whatever. It was fun to talk to him about Sushi Go. It was our 100th episode. It was Sushi Go's 10-year anniversary. Like they had the fancy special edition at Gen Con and just like getting to chat with him about Sushi Go, but all his other designs and just like how he has gone from doing more solo to like going into more co-designs and where his brain is at has been so interesting. And just really like talking about kind of our insecurities on when it comes to design when we first started. Him and I very much aligned on, because we weren't making these like heavier games, we had some other designers kind of look down on us because we were making those like chunky Euro games. So it was kind of like nice to see that I'm not the only person that has like felt that from the community. And as much as I like to make this show about like, here's the bright side, like I also like when we talk about the real stuff. It's ridiculous, but people get judged on both sides sometimes. We'll be like, oh my God, you're a party game designer, where other people will realize creating a simple, clean, fun game that is still unique is hard. With a heavy game, you can fix problems by adding things. You cannot do that with entry-level games or with party games or social games or whatever. It is a very different design process. And so it was really nice to get to like kind of chat with him about our thoughts.
Yeah, on that point, every industry has like its own form of imposter syndrome. In gaming, it's, well, if you're not making the biggest, baddest, heaviest game in the world, then you're not that smart, or you're not the best designer, or you're not as talented for whatever reason. And that's obviously not true. So to hear somebody like Phil talk about being somebody who had a little bit, even that insecurity, or just like, you know, the way he thinks of games and is okay and comfortable making these types of games and built up this stuff, is somebody that season saying that probably feels good to other designers to be like, oh, whatever you're working on, like you said, you're always a game designer and it doesn't matter what you're working on. Everything has a different way of going about it, and everything's difficult in its own way and easy in its own way. And also it's where you're comfortable. I felt like that episode had a lot of like depth to it because it hit on so many different things that everybody's talked about just because he's been in the industry for a long time. Also, that Sushi Go special edition box, I got one. So cute. I won't ruin any of the surprises in it, but like when you lift the little thing and there's other little packages in there to open up, very exciting. So go get that if you still can.
It's literally like a bento box. It's great.
It's adorable.
Yeah. I felt like it was a therapy session, that episode, for me. I'm not going to lie. It was kind of like, I never really fangirl over designers because like we're all people. I just more connect sometimes with different ones who think similar to me. And so when I hear someone having similar experiences, but I see like how successful they are, it like makes me feel good inside. Hopefully people will feel similar with that episode. If they haven't already checked it out, they totally should. Among all the other episodes of the season / the show, I really should listen back on some of the beginning ones and see like how different things are now.
Yeah, right. Just to kind of compile the advice somewhere one day from each episode and put together like, you know, 100 pieces of advice from 100 different designers. Kind of cool. I think you should do it.
That would be pretty cool. Except for a lot of people give the exact same advice.
Yeah, but then it's kind of, I don't know. There's something to be said about it. You take a different quote from each episode.
All right.
We'll work on it.
Okay, we'll workshop this. Speaking of which, things that get repeated over and over again. Another game that was kind of cool to have on this show was the Trekking the World second edition with Nick Bentley, talking about why make a second edition. Also, why did they call this a second edition? Because for those of you who've been listening, I used to work at Underdog Games, and Nick and I co-designed Her Story along with Emerson Masucci. And so it was cool to have my co-designer on the show, but to like ask him the questions of why did they need a second edition, especially when the game is not out for like even 10 years. But also this gameplay is very different. And I personally still believe that it should have had a different name. I don't think it was a second edition, but I really liked to play devil's advocate in that episode.
I thought you guys did a good job at that. It was a really interesting conversation, knowing how when that decision was being made, you guys were kind of on opposite teams there of like what your thoughts were and why. Like you said, some things get repeated in episodes, and not in a bad way, just because some things are similar in the industry or people run into similar issues or challenges while they're making games. This was kind of a new conversation that we hadn't really touched on before or heard about. So it was kind of cool to like hear the different opinions of why you both thought that. And they were both super valid. I feel like it could have went either way. So it was interesting to just see kind of how it turned out. You know, you'll never get to A-B test it because you're not going to do a run of each with the different names. But, you know, that would be a lot.
Yeah. It's funny enough, they did do some testing on it, but that's what they chose to go with. I'm always curious when I check in with them to figure out what's going on and stuff, since I do have games coming out in the future with them, which is really cool. He still doesn't know if what they did was the right answer.
So and you might never know.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of the cool thing with design and creating these products. Like, yeah, maybe you'll never know.
Yeah, and you probably won't. I mean, I have my marketing background, so I feel like for me, there's always like this 10 to 15% ratio of stuff you're just not going to know, and you have to just accept that. So kind of similar here.
Oh, for sure. Did you have any other games that you can think of that you're like, oh yeah, this was a cool conversation?
The Cascade System, I thought that was a super interesting episode because it stemmed from like a relationship with a brewery or a bar or whatever it was. So coming up with the characters for like the different drinks and stuff, a collaboration like that, there haven't been a lot of episodes about. So just that relationship and working with people to come up with something different and collaborate with it. And it was only available like through that and given out at a specific convention.
It was at C2E2.
C2E2, yeah.
Which is a Comic-Con in Chicago for people who don't know what that is.
Revolution Brewery, that was it. They made heroes for all the different IPAs and beers and like little packs. And it was like an RPG that they gave out. There's something to be said about games as an experience or something specific associated with another company, and kind of getting to enjoy that exclusivity of it was pretty cool.
No, I totally agree. And also just the organic nature that that partnership came from was interesting, because a lot of times people ask like, how did you get it? I mean, I ask at the beginning of my thing, how did you get into designing games? How do some of these relationships happen? Like when I ended up making the game for eBay, it's just like that happened in a crazy way. I was at an airport after Gen Con in Hungary and there were no seats. And it was right after or I shouldn't say after COVID, but we were still wearing masks. First time after COVID started to clear up that Gen Con happened. And luckily enough, I had a guy that was willing to share a table that just happened to work at eBay that I happened to pitch the idea of making a Gen Con exclusive eBay game. Crazy stuff like that happens, but then some of these games come out of it. So it's so cool to see that. And also in the Cascade system, they talk about how the system is growing and how they're implementing it into other events, other ways of doing things. So I think it's super cool. And how they also partner it with just events that they put on in Chicago. I love that collaboration.
A super cool thing you don't see a lot of. And like you said about the eBay experience, you never know who you're sitting next to at a convention. I know people like to say that, but also just in general, if you hit it off and you start talking about something that you love, whether it be board game design or whatever, you never know where that conversation is going to lead. So you're a creative person, you'll make something of that experience and that encounter.
Oh, totally. Thinking along that route is the episode Shake That City. I thought it was cool how Mads and his co-designer were hey, we want to make this device to do this cool thing. It has nothing to do with collaboration on a company or whatever, but it's just thinking outside of the box. I mean, granted, they made a box.
Literally.
They literally made a box. I don't know. It's just so cool, these conversations of how people come up with some of this stuff. Because I'm just you know what I want to do? I want to poop some cubes out in specific locations. That piece made the game. It made it so much more interesting. Kind of Camel Up, how they have that pyramid that you shake and then you poop out the die. So many of my friends, they just want to poop dies out. The component first design was just so interesting. And it almost became the theme didn't really matter. It was just how are we doing this abstracted activity? And how do we make a cool component that helps you do it?
Yeah. And I know you've touched on this before too, because table presence is a thing, right? You walk into a convention, you walk into a game store, wherever it is, somebody's house, and you see these devices and these different things. It's going to catch your eye. You're going to ask how it works because it's something different. Your game balls, right? It has such table presence. It's got all the rainbow balls. It's tall. It's what's going on there? This cube shaker box kind of reminded me of that. I was okay, if I saw that, I'd be I need to know how that thing works.
It was also just so interesting because in the episode, I mentioned that I played that game when I was at a board game wedding called Matricon. And I was with the person who does inventor relations for Hasbro. And they were we reviewed this game, but we decided to pass on it because we thought it'd be too expensive to make with the plastic. But then AEG decided no, we're going to do it, and figured out how to create it out of chipboard and rubber bands. It's interesting how, depending on the publisher you're working with, they can work with you to make a more cost-effective form of a prototype, or they're able to be a little more creative. Because a lot of times when I talk to designers, we have this idea of, we need to make really pretty prototype, or we have to kind of sell it as a product. And it used to be oh no, I mean, if it's a good gameplay, it'll shine, it'll get signed. But it's getting to be so much more competition. And publishers, I hate to say it, they're getting kind of lazy in some ways. They're having a harder time imagining something. And so you kind of have to do some of that work for them. I found that cool to talk about hey, there's this device that they created and this was their hook for their game. And they were able to find a publisher willing to work to make it affordable.
There's some good advice that you just gave, basically being able to say, hey, if I put in this work, if I come up with this idea, showing as much as you can, outlining how it's possible, how it can be executed to help the publisher, to push them along. Because the more work you do up front, obviously the art might change, the name might change, whatever, depending on how your agreement works out. But just the idea of being able to say, hey, this is what it looks like, what it does, how it operates, and why it does this, explaining all those things and showing them that it's worth doing is super important. I like that talk too about how they were oh yeah, and then we worked with AEG and it was a good experience, and you know, they got the game made and it's cool.
We love it. And then I would say once again, tons of really cool episodes in this season, but I think the last one that really went to my brain that I took a lesson out of was the Omicron Protocol game. It was more what people were saying about it. What they were saying was more in regards to the artwork. So the designers / publishers were hey, we want to make sure to feature people that look like everyone. And then, especially because this was a minis heavy game, it was cool because one of the people that came by was oh my God, this looks kind of like me. It was an Asian American character. And having that representation in artwork is just so important because even me, I mean, I'm blonde, blue eyed and female. Yes, there are tons of me out there. There's a lot of Barbie dolls. It's basically what I describe. But the thing is my body shape is not represented in most places. I don't have a very curvy body. I don't have boobs. I don't have an ass. I have a little bit of muscle, but that's only if I regularly am working out and going to the rock climbing gym. But yeah, so it was like cool to have a conversation about how do we represent these people that are underrepresented? And how do we like bring people into this thing that they enjoyed? Like they both enjoyed like minis games, like miniatures, but it's such a costly hobby to get into. And so they wanted to make something that was approachable on the dollar, approachable for like that group of people that they were just trying to like bring into minis who maybe like board games, but also approachable to like different minorities and body shapes and all that through the art and the minis that they created. And so I just found that awesome.
Yeah, me too. I loved how big picture thinking their whole project was from start to finish. It came full circle when they said their favorite part of the experience of the game and everything was hearing that feedback of people sitting and playing the game and being like, that's me. You know, I don't expect, maybe on TV I'll see myself, maybe in a book, maybe I won't ever, but like to see myself in a game, that's something that's so, so rare. They have great stuff on Board Game. People paint their minis and stuff and you look there, like they're all really cool. The box art is really great. They just really did the research and really put a lot of effort into it. And it's obviously appreciated. So it's great to see that.
Especially as new designers / publishers to be doing that. I find that awesome. And that they have like expansion ideas and that they're putting a little piece of like themselves into it. I think that shows a lot of heart. And that's why I immediately connected with them, because we just happened to be next to each other in Spiel in Essen, Germany, setting up our first looks for media and stuff. And they ended up having their stuff stolen, which is crazy.
Oh no.
I know. I don't know if I don't remember if I mentioned that on the show or not, but yeah, they ended up having their stuff stolen because people are the worst. I do not understand the world that we live in. And yet, still smiling and still like, oh, you know, it could have been worse because of this. It wasn't like their only game, thankfully, where some people it was like literally their only prototype and they were just showing it off as like a Kickstarter. Good guys. It was a great chat and highly recommend checking out their game and all the other games that we've been mentioning.
Oh, so many good games. So you're always talking to other designers about their games on here, obviously. Of course, I have to ask you about what you've been working on and any games in the horizon that we can expect to see with your name on it soon.
Good questions. Since starting this season, I have been mostly having a lot of development credits and kind of like project management, product design credits through my day job, Wise Wizard Games, and our new imprint, Wacky Wizard Games. So I mentioned like Caution Signs has been doing really well. We also had Star Realms Academy, which was our like family-friendly, like kid-friendly Star Realms version that is more streamlined, language independent, and plays in about 15 minutes, which I love. And then Pack the Essentials actually just dropped in January. And that's a polyomino, fit your cats and your clothing in a suitcase kind of game, which was really cute. And I got to work with Jacqueline on, and I got solo design credits, which I am not a solo game designer. So that was like an interesting thing for me to research a bunch of different solo modes on a polyomino game. So it's like, I got to work with her on that. So that was really fun. I would say of all the development I have done, I worked the most hand in hand with Jacqueline on that. And she is a first time female designer. So like, I really enjoyed working with her. And then we've got Push Push Penguin that's going to be coming out, which we mentioned in the Monkey Palace episode, because David is one of the co-designers on that game. There's also Chris Chan, who was on the podcast, God, it might have been 2, maybe even 3 seasons ago. He did Night Cage and did the illustration for not only that, but also for Push Push Penguin. So it's like, he is ridiculously talented. But yeah, so I had a lot of that cool stuff. Projects that I have on the horizon that are like signed where I will have design credits. I've got Tricky Kids. That's with Pandasaurus Games, which should be coming out this year. And once again, when I'm talking about all this, as a lot of designers have figured out, or just listeners in general, times change and things can happen. So do not stay strict to any timelines. I might not even give timelines on these just because it might be safer that way in case people get excited. But Tricky Kids was a game that I co-designed with my friend Steven. And where that one came from is I hate trick-taking games and I wanted to make a game that I would like. And the reason I don't like trick-taking games is I hate getting stuck with numbers that I feel like I can't use. And I feel like a lot of times trick-takers, what they do is you have to take a guess on how well your hand will do. And that's kind of like, they're fixing the problem with that. So instead I was like, you know what? I want to write my own numbers. So the idea of the game was that you're going to write your own numbers on each of these cards. And you're going to have like a certain amount of points that you can put onto each of them. And now there's also tricky rules. Because we're actually we're kids making crap up, which is the whole theme of the game. And so we're trying to like win these tokens with different point values, try to lead people into the negative or not negative, but like 0 points or low points and like bleed them of different suits. But it's cool because you only have yourself to blame because you're the one who put the numbers. You had full information of what you could potentially win. And we've got these rule cards that can mix it up every time you play that add like a little bit of extra if you don't want to just play the base game. This was cool because I had this idea. I reached out to Steve and I was like, hey, you love trick-taking games. Can I have you as like the soundboard basically, because he had all this knowledge and I was definitely not going to be playing that many games of trick-taking games to like figure out if this game made sense or if it had already been done before. And so it's funny because we actually got the game signed before he even played it, which I find very interesting. And that was one that last year I basically prototyped it, brought it to SaltCon. I'm so happy I stayed up late and like prototyped it right before going to SaltCon. But I went from SaltCon to Gamma to Unpub to PAX East. And just this game got playtested more than any game ever. Like I basically handed it off to people because they just wanted to keep playing and they wanted to show more people how to play it. And I was like, oh my God. So like by the end of SaltCon, I was like, you know, I might just put this in my pitch deck. I ended up getting an offer during Unpub, which was the third of the four conventions back to back I did. And I believe it was March. So it was pretty insane. I've never had a game get like so much buzz so quickly that I got an offer. And it wasn't even like I was pitching it. I was literally just playing it at Unpub. And I just happened to be sitting down with a publisher. But at that point, so many other people had seen it. So it became this really awkward of, hey, I've never had this many publishers looking at a game, but I had never had like CEG talk to me before, really. There was some other like publishers that were kind of bigger names that up until this point, like Lucky Duck had never really considered talking to me that much. But that game kind of like put me in front of a lot of publishers. They learned that I had this like interesting hook that no one had done and it had been working very quickly. It was like a lightning in a bottle, kind of like when I talked to Emerson about Century Spice. So I am excited that game is going to be coming out this year. So its turnaround will be like within a year or less of since it was birthed from my brain. That one I'm really excited about. And then we have the second in the National Geographic Secret Clue game line called Cuisine. It'll be the follow-up to Animal, which I did talk about on the episode with Nick Bentley. That's with Underdog Games. So I'm excited for this game because it is officially going to be my first system that is getting used on multiple games. I've never created a system before. And once that game is out, I will have created a system, which is really, really cool. And not something like it was kind of on a bucket list item. Be warned, do not play that game on an empty stomach because it is delicious looking. And you mentioned balls. We love some balls. That one is Plinko, basically gamified and co-op and just so fun and wonderful to watch. And that's going to be with CMYK Games. And then I got two Untitled and a Retheme. So we have one with Inside Up. I have one with Grand Gamers Guild. And then a Retheme with Talon Strike Studios that used to be called Innkeeper. And it's kind of cool because these are mixtures of solo and co-design. So like Tricky Kids is a co-design. Secret Clue is just me. Balls is a co-design with Tam, who is actually going to be kicking off the next season. He was the co-designer on Monkey Palace that David referenced. So it's like we are friends and we have that co-design together. And then the one for Inside Up Games is a co-design with Charlie Bink, who did the Trekking Games, which he's been on the show. I think he was like one of my first three or four episodes in the entire podcast. And then I've got the solo one with Grand Gamer and the solo one with Talon Strike. So it's like, I'm enjoying doing a combination of working on my own ideas, but also like partnering with people that I think will help me push something to the next level.
Well, damn, okay, that's a lot, but actually not really, because I know your big brain is too big for just six games, so there's got to be some other prototypes you've been working on that you haven't found a home for yet, so you want to talk about any of those?
kind of a little bit, maybe, yes. Going into like what I call my pitching season, I try to choose specific conventions for pitching because I do work full-time with Wise Wizard Games, so I'm typically at the big shows working for them at the booth. I very rarely now take pitches at them, so I have to choose specific shows in order to pitch. And so the games that I'm like really trying to focus on getting signed, and hopefully they do because I've already had some buzz on quite a few of these. One is Suss It Out. That is a game co-designed with Jason Slingerland, who also was on the show. He was Turnanog. We were both quote-unquote special at Grand Con. I think they meant to say special guest, but they left the guest part off. And so we like just met and immediately clicked. And he had art for a prototype that got signed, but they ditched the art. And he's like, hey, could you come up with an idea for this? And I was like, oh my God, yes. Like immediately I saw this art and I saw a game forming in my brain. And so he and I kind of combined to create this like large scaling cooperative guess who style game, which Amanda, I got to play that at Christmas or play test it with you and your cousins. Like, what a fun way to get to know your family.
That was fun. Yeah, they had a great time.
We were so much like arguing. It was so funny. Also, just like, which cousin was it that just straight up guessed out of the blue and all of us like gave a dirty look and was correct?
Yeah,
Maddie. I was just like, what? Because all of us are just like, no. And then it was correct. I was like, oh my God. Like, normally I'm like, phone a friend. This is a co-op game. When people just like make guesses without conversing first, it like causes anxiety in myself.
Yeah, well, two of them are the sisters and they just like, you know, have to one up each other. Very, very funny. But yeah, Maddie went in with that and we were shocked.
Yes.
But
oh my God. But that was so good. I love making co-op games. I've been on a little bit of a kick of that. But yeah, so we got that one. Something Scary is a game I designed for the IP Something Scary. So that is a YouTube channel with a bunch of episodes as well as like a podcast, and they have like Vimeo and all that good stuff. There you have like over 2 million followers. And that was a situation where they reached out to me to design a game for their IP, but they've been having me pitch it to different publishers. And it actually was with the publisher for a while, but now, unfortunately, it needs a new home. So it's gone back into my deck to pitch out. And so hopefully that scary, but also kind of stabby, fun game gets a home. And then kind of on the flip side, we got like Halloweenish vibes. But then we also have a prototype that me and Scott Brady, who did Caution Signs together, it is a Christmas-themed game that we keep going back and forth on if we should call it All the Trimmings or Adornable. I would love to get your marketing brain on that. Which name sounds better? I can explain the game, but...
Okay, I can argue for both of those all day. But I think without doing any searching or like thinking too hard, mm-hmm. I think All the Trimmings has more opportunity.
Interesting. Okay, so I've been going a little more that way and he's been going Adornable.
Of course we have the same one.
Well, I mean, okay, so like basically where this game came from was, you know, Christmas season has wrapped up. I put my stuff away and I have a tiny little Christmas tree I lovingly call Piney. My cat Nova is bigger than it and she makes sure to prove that she's bigger by knocking it over. And I was like, God, cats can be such dicks to trees and ornaments. And I was like, wait, that could be a game. Especially I was like, hey, Scott, you already did Boop the Hall. You got a cat on a tree. What do you think about making like a push your luck game or like a tile laying game? And so basically this became this like very simple draw two, choose use one, hold the other one, tile laying game that you are building a tree essentially because you're just like putting these almost triangular tiles, even though they have four sides because we kind of clipped the top, to build out your little pine trees with ornaments on it. And they all have like different scoring conditions. So it's like you have your cat who is worth a point, but it kind of boops the tile away. So it's like if it touches the tile, it makes it relocate because cats are like that and you gotta like move things away from them and stuff. And then you got like getting pairs of candy canes get you things, or you have candles. You don't want those tiles touching. Otherwise it's a fire hazard and catches fire. Or you want to like connect the different strings. So is it like a string of popcorn or lights or whatever and stuff. And so we made this like very deeply thematic tile laying game with like set collection and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see if we get that game signed because I feel like holiday-based game design is just really hard to do because it's hard to find a publisher, but Christmas is one that – Christmas season is where most games get bought, like gifting season. And a lot of people type in Christmas game because they want to play something with their family. And because so many gamers finally have an opportunity to play a game with their family, I think they would gravitate towards a light strategy game. So we'll see if we can make that work. I'm enjoying playtesting it, even though it's getting less and less cold. And so it's going to get a little more awkward, I think, playing it.
Well, you'll have to get it planned out before the holiday season so people can bring all of the trimmings to their holiday dinner.
Wow. Well done, marketing.
No, that was great.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, holiday stuff seems difficult. But I think, obviously, if you're planning on, like, launching it at the right time and doing, like, a big thing and selling all your copies, that's great.
Oh, totally. I mean, any ideal holiday themed game should print, sell out, and then reprint in time for the next season. Like, it's just that, and it's smaller like warehousing fees, because that's the part that people are scared of, is having these games just sitting in a warehouse and you spending money on that. So yeah, that's a fun game that I've been working on. And then Beagle 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 is a co-design with David, who once again, Monkey Palace. And that was kind of like our way of combining. One, he was obsessed with beagles. Granted, we need to change the name because we have now added different breeds of dogs. But the idea is it is kind of like a simultaneous action reveal to be a dog, and you are trying to be a good dog by either like, say, shaking a paw or like laying down or whatever. And that just is like the priority of getting a treat, a dog treat that you're trying to do set collection with. So think Sushi Go. But you can also be a bad dog and instead steal pizza, which, like I said, T-Swifty style. I dated someone who was really into pizza, and so I like put a little nod to her, but also David's dog, which is named Gordon, because like last name Gordon, yes. First name Gordon. He's a monster. You cannot leave food near him. He has almost eaten a full pizza slice from my hand, and therefore I was like, combo, we're putting this in the game. And so people get to like potentially push their luck and steal some pizza and make some pies. Or they can be good dogs and get the treats, but then also upgrade by taking a little nap and getting back their cards and getting new tricks learned. And so it's very cutesy, tied with the theme, but it's really just like an entry level teaching of mechanics that have been in other games, but in a different way with a cute theme, which I do think is like an important form of design because we constantly have new gamers coming in. And so we need to have new entry level games for like different generations. So that one's been really, really cute. That is pitchable. And then the last pitchable game is one that I worked on with you called Fireworks, which if you want to talk about it, you can talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's been fun. I've always kind of like wanted to be more involved in one of these projects. It's cool. It's like a quick, easy card game. I feel like it's great because you can kind of bring it anywhere. And again, very approachable mechanics. And essentially, you have a grid in front of you of cards and they're all represented by fire, so different numbers, and they almost look like Tetris pieces on them that tell you the shape of when they explode, the cards they affect in your grid. You're flipping them, filling the space, and going through a deck of cards called sparklers, essentially, to get rid of as many cards as possible so and get as many points as possible. So you just test it and played it again, and people have been enjoying it. It's fun, and it's cool and colorful, and yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited because we're going to be, or I will be pitching it at my first shows and stuff over at Gamma and New York Toy Fair. So fingers crossed. And then one I'm going to say is an honorable mention, but it is not at pitching point. I am hoping to have it ready by the time like Origins is rolling around. And that is, I mentioned in person when people talk to me about design, I typically work on like one heavier game. Like they're not super heavy. They're more like anyone who's played Her Story around that level, maybe a little bit more kind of a lighter Euro game. And so I convinced Roberta Taylor, who did Creature Comforts, to co-design with me. And that happened because I went to a women's game design retreat. And she was like one of the special guests. And I became an unintentional special guest just because no one knew who I was until it was a little too late and they found out how many things I do. But she and I have become friends over the past few years. And she was like the perfect person to help me with this game called Daughters of Asclepius. It is a game that I have been trying to make for forever. I've rebooted it so many times, and I was like, I need a co-designer. And we've talked about this in various episodes. Sometimes you get stuck and you just need a new perspective. And so I thought she was the perspective I needed. And I am so glad I did this. Like, I literally ran a playtest on my lunch break today, and I was like, oh my God, this game, like, I see so much potential in it. It is so fun. And I'm not going to talk about how the game plays, but I will talk about where the inspiration came from, which is anyone who is a Greek mythology person. Like, I was a super nerd. I mean, I am a super nerd, let's be honest.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Basically, Asclepius was the son of Apollo. He was a god of healing. And the first necromancer, because he decided to push his healing abilities too far and start bringing people back from the dead, which not great to Hades, who needs those souls in his underworld. Therefore, Hades went to Apollo's father, aka Zeus, and said, hey, brother, could you take care of your grandkid? He's taking the souls from me. And Zeus like, I got you, and murders his grandson. Bye-bye, Asclepius. You are now gone. Apollo is just like, what? You killed your grandson, my son. I can't kill you, though. So therefore, I'm going to kill the Cyclopses who made the thunderbolts that, you know, killed Asclepius. Which Zeus was like, well, I can't kill you, too. So what I'm going to do is put you on timeout because that was bad of you to kill my Cyclopses. So sends him to Earth as a human. Well, okay, so here's the problem. Humanity now has no one to heal anyone, and so people are dying, and we have a problem, and therefore we have the daughters of Asclepius, five immortal daughters, which you will be playing as in order to save these poor human souls. And so I have had a lot of fun. I told the story exactly how I did on this episode to Roberta, and she's like, oh, I'm so in. And we've been working on some cool stuff to make the story really sing, but also the mechanics interesting. And she has tied in some of her kind of like engine building worker placement vibes that we know and love from her series. And so I am excited to get it to a point where we can pitch it, because I have already had a few publishers interested in it, and the game is not even fully built. So the buzz is like already starting, which is really cool.
I love that. I'm excited to see what that develops into.
Yeah, me too. Also, I just love the fact that I'm designing with women, finally. Like, before, it's only been men. No offense, guys listening. I love you all. There's just not a lot of girls. Or at least not a lot that I've vibed with to the point where I wanted to be co-designing with them. So I'm excited to hopefully maybe get my first signed game with a girl. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be really cool to see just like power duo coming out with a cool game.
I know. Hopefully next time we're doing one of these recaps, it's the two of us.
That too. Yeah, let's do it.
Yep. Just going to manifest that right now.
I mean, obviously, tons of really cool stuff coming out from you, like already signed, in the works, on the brain, tons of games as always. But besides that, anything else related changing your life since the season aired?
I feel like when people ask, how are you doing? I'm always like, oh, same old, same old. But my same old is like super speeding through life and not breathing. But yeah, as I mentioned, I am not on the board anymore of Unpub. I have like stepped into the more advisory space with Amanda, which is fun. But then I also ended up winning the Play Creator Awards Rising Star last year in London. So I took a chance, went to London when I knew I was nominated, actually won, which still blows my mind because the other people that I was up against are from like Spin Master and Hasbro and like the big names, and the little me won. Granted, I was prepared to give a speech. I was unprepared for them to play Taylor Swift and want me to dance. And then I matched the terrible dancing that was the person who like was the MC, and it was so awkward. And I'm so glad I won, but oh my God, is it the most awkward video to watch?
Is this where the Taylor Swift nickname came in, or is it
like... No, that was before this. It's almost like the energy felt it, but it was funny because in the speech they were like, the Simba, the like new one, we will lift them up. And I'm just like wearing a printed dress, like animal print dress, and I was like,
oh boy,
oh no. And so many people asked me after, like, did you know when you dressed up for it? I was like, I'm not Simba.
It was like those things at sporting events where they looked around and so you rang and like, here's the perfect song for you.
Oh my God, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, yes, maybe.
But also very funny.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so let's see, that happened. I got to be a special guest at Grand Con, where I met some really cool other special guests. I also was one at Level Up in New Jersey this year. And then I got my name printed on a sign at Origins Game Fair. For the first time, they had like kind of comic book and like pop culture people that you could get signatures from. But they also did like a designer space like that too. So I felt like I was a person from Comic-Con. And I am so thankful that they put me and Scott Brady together. Like, we had our own signs, but we got to sit in the same spot. So we constantly had someone. Unlike the little awkwardness that I felt in watching some of the other designers that didn't, but like Elizabeth Hargrave was freaking killing it. Like, woo, big line. Everyone wanted to see her. And I love that because she's amazing. But yeah, so now I have this giant sign that says Danielle Reynolds. I made a joke and took a picture of it, putting it above my bed, but now it's currently in the basement of my apartment.
Oh, it belongs somewhere other than the basement, that's for sure.
It's in the basement. I don't know where to put it. It's giant. I've thought about turning it over to the other side and making like an art, I don't know, some kind of like artist-y thingy. I don't know. Maybe I'll do like paper mache on it. I don't know. But then that's like ruining. So I don't know what to do with this thing. But it's cool that I have it. That was an honor that I did not expect and was very surprised by. That happened. And I was also in this year's Mojo Nation Top 100 for the design champion this time instead of I was Rising Star last year. So the fact that 2 years in a row I was in this magazine, amazing. But more importantly, that it was for the design champion, for doing things like the nonprofits and stuff that I work on and volunteer for, which I don't make any money off of it. I do it because I enjoy it and I enjoy like these groups and stuff. So that was like really nice to be acknowledged for kind of my extracurriculars, not so much the games I've made. I mean, they are related, but it felt a little different and a little more special to me.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like that's always been something you said. And I mean, since I've met you, because I obviously met you through Tabletop Gamers, it's one of those where, yes, you love what you do and you're passionate about it, but you're also super passionate about like making the industry a better place for everybody. People recognize that and you're really making a name for yourself and for other people that way, which is awesome. So it's cool that you got recognized for something, just not just the game, but like something more runs deep, you know? But speaking of that kind of design champion mentality, you obviously champion for a lot of nonprofits. So is there anything cool happening with any of your organizations you volunteer for?
Well, I know you in the beginning mentioned Tabletop Gamers celebrating the 10-year anniversary. Do you want to chime in and help me talk about the cool stuff we got going on this year?
Yeah, we have a lot of cool stuff going on, being that the organization is turning 10 years, which is awesome, an awesome milestone. So congrats to like everybody in the organization, because that's something you don't hear all the time. A lot of organizations kind of fall apart before then.
Oh my God, for real. And we're like getting more official. I just had to fill out paperwork today again.
Yeah, exactly. More paperwork. The bigger you get, the more paperwork you have to do. Don't do it. And I'm just gonna.
Yeah, right. For real.
We have, obviously we do some really cool pins and stuff every year. So I don't know if I want to like spoil all the surprises, but we're doing something in collaboration with that this year for our 10-year anniversary, which is going to be awesome. We've come up with a really cool theme. We're partnering with 9th Level Games to have an RPG one-shot design for the game, kind of paired with like our theme and everything. There's going to be more gamer quests. We did these like gamer scavenger hunts at a couple of conventions last year that went over super well. Like over like thousands of people did them. We were giving out pins left and right. It was like a huge success. The team and everyone putting that together did an awesome job. And you basically go around and you have to go to different like organizations that have either queer representation or they're queer owned or whatever it may be, get like stamps, collect all the pins. We're also doing, actually, you could talk about the calendar.
Yeah. So I have been doing this calendar that's going to be featuring different like LGBTQIA community member artists and stuff. So this will be kind of like a little art gallery in a calendar. And we've gone with like Seasons of Pride as the theme. And so I'm very pumped for that to come out later in the year before like winter time. Therefore, people will have it a little early and can hopefully gift it and stuff. And that's been an interesting challenge for me, honestly. Like, it is still so surprising to me because I am very, very, very gay and very open about it, that when I reach out to some people, they'll be like, oh, yeah, like I'm queer. But then I'm like, oh, okay, well, you want to be a part of this calendar? And then they're like, oh, I'm not gay enough to be like printed in something. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm not actually out to my family, or oh, I'm not actually out to like the community as a whole. And when I say community, I mean gaming community. And so that's like, it's always humbling when you work on these kind of projects to like realize like what your hurdles are going to be and how to tackle them. I'm excited for when this calendar comes out. It will be an interesting experience, but also I just freaking love anytime I get one of these pins I designed. I've run out of space and I need to figure out if I'm going to do a gay lanyard or if I'm going to do a like Danielle design these pins lanyard or what. I'm very excited for the new pin collection and stuff. It is going to be so fun and adorable. I hope people relate to a lot of the little people I made.
I think they will.
But yeah, so I got that going. And then Tabletop Game Design Network. A lot of you know that I'm on their advisory board, but also Pete McPherson and I started answering questions and kind of writing a blog titled Missing Pieces for anyone who's a part of that awesome design resource. So basically people will just submit like, hey, we have this question. We're stuck on this piece of our game and we will answer those questions. And for the times that people haven't submitted a question, I will take a question that has been asked either like on social media or like me personally in a conversation and kind of just like give some advice on what's going on design wise. And so that kind of stemmed from a panel we did at Unpub Prime, and we are going to be doing another panel at Unpub Prime. This year, last year, we had Erica Boaris, who is just like a ridiculously talented female designer that works for Spin Master. Like if you saw the Wicked game, like she made that among many other games. And she will not be on this one. Instead, we are going to have Connie Volgeman, who is also epic designer, part of this season. And, you know, talking about like some dragons and about some bees and all the good things. But she'll be there given her perspective. I really, really enjoy especially having like women who are making heavier games talk about their experiences, because it's very different from what I've done. So hoping that panel of the three of us, and maybe we'll add an extra person, like Kurt came on from Smirk and Dagger last year. Like maybe we'll have one more, but it'll be cool to see that panel get reprinted or repeated. And the fact that it actually inspired this now like kind of blog that's a part of a really cool resource. So if anyone is trying to design games and needs a little bit of help, I definitely recommend the Tabletop Game Design Network. You should check them out.
Yes, check them out if you haven't already. sign up, get the newsletter, go to that panel if you're going to be at the convention. Let's see, what else? So obviously, working in the industry, I'm sure you're always learning new stuff on the daily, but do you have any new advice for listeners about breaking into the industry, game design, any other game-related things that you do?
Yeah. And actually, I like don't know why, but I blanked it out. It is Tabletop Game Designers Association, not network. That was one of the things that we consider calling missing pieces. Whoopsies. But I would say as far as just kind of like general advice people should be aware of that maybe we have or haven't talked about on the show, but I feel like we touch on it pretty frequently, is like find your audience for your game and then make sure to test with them. Like I gravitate towards those more entry-level strategy games and social games. So I focus playtesting with both gamers and non-gamers, but typically it's more like people who their favorite game is maybe Uno or Cards Against Humanity. Like that's more my target audience and who I play games with. And that could mean convincing people at my rock climbing gym to play a game or like going into a school and playing with a bunch of kids or something. So just like really try to figure out like who is this game intended for? Because like you got to think about it more as a product. I feel like finding that hook that sets the game apart is really important. But even sometimes it's just like, how are you mixing these basic mechanics that just need to get like revitalized in this new product? And how do you do it successfully? Thinking about it as a product, testing for your audience. And then remember, like when you are pitching, you're not only pitching your game, you're pitching yourself. And that's important because I now, due to Wise Wizard Games, do a lot more inventor relations. I receive a lot of pitches. I try to treat designers the way I wish I was treated because so often I would send an email into the void and never get a response. I respond to every person who ever sends something to me and I spend a lot of time doing it. And sometimes like I will not give like a full explanation as to why. I try to give a little brief like why it's not a fit. But I've had designers that will come back and be like, well, why? Or like, oh, I changed this one thing. Now it fits. And I'm like, just like be cognizant of the time that I am giving you because so many people that work for smaller companies are wearing a lot of hats and trying to juggle a lot of balls. And you can't be mad if like a Kickstarter is running a little late because someone's answering emails about like this designer who just won't be okay with a no. So like when you're pitching, remember you are pitching yourself because if you take a no well, I will be ready to give you another no or maybe a yes later. I definitely found that like me on the other side, I am a master of getting rejected. And I've had publishers that have straight up said that I am one of their favorite people to reject. And I take it as a compliment. I am so here for it. And then we kind of talked about Carol and like accessibility and all the work on that. Definitely check out that episode because there's a lot you can do to try to reduce cognitive load by like, say, removing text and switching to symbols or like changing how players interact with components. Like when we worked on Her Story, having cards that you're not holding in your hand, but instead putting it on the board, it made it more accessible to people who have a harder time holding things or like kids where you're helping them or like entry level gamers who maybe need a little help. And that way you had all that information to look at. So it's just like all these little nuances. Some quick little pieces of advice that just I'm either reiterating on or just kind of thrown out into the void that hasn't been said more recently on an episode.
No, that was all really great. The summary of everything you've said, everything people have said this season, last season, all the seasons combined, it sounds like the three P's of game design. It's like patience, persistence, and passion. All of those things together. That's what's going to publish your game eventually, is just caring about what you do, being patient, being kind, working with people, meeting people, networking, and being persistent, and like just, yeah, being a part of it. Like everything that everybody has said that you talk to is always about just being so happy to be designing games, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess, you know, end of the season here and everything, what or who can we expect to hear from in the upcoming season of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication?
Ooh, yeah. So already lined up, we've got Tam, the other half of the LEGO Monkey Palace, talking about a different game that he co-designed and actually launched a company off of. So that'll be a fun opener to the season. We will also have Bug from Ninth Level Games talking about an RPG that was designed in part as kind of a love gift to their partner. And we got Nicole Amato from like Kickstarter and also just like a cool game designer and another person that I really got to like, I knew, but before going to this like women's game design retreat thing, didn't have a chance to like really get to know. So I'm excited that those are the first three people, but I also have a bunch of awesome newer designers as well as established designers popping up onto the show. So you're going to get a real nice mix of different voices in the next season.
Love it. I'm excited for it. I'm sure everybody else is as well. How can our listeners support the show?
You know, just honestly listen to it, share it. If you like an episode, rate it, write reviews. This is a resource meant to help people, but also just like to fans who like games, who want to learn more about just every once in a while a game that tickles your fancy, like listen to the show. And moving forward, a goal that I'm not holding myself fully to, but I would like to move this partially onto YouTube also, because I've had a lot of people talk to me and say that they consume podcasts with YouTube, which I always found interesting because I think of that more as a visual medium. But yeah, so I think I'm going to be starting to put some of my episodes on YouTube in the future. So if when I do that, I would love if people like it or subscribe to it or all that good stuff. We'll see. Those are some ways to support me and just, you know, keep enjoying games. Keep me employed. Buy games. Check out the stuff I'm doing for sure.
Yeah, no, again, this is a great resource. I can't believe it's episode 110. That's like wild, like something you just kind of started and it's been going. And people listen to it. I love when people come on the episode and they're like, I listened to this, and satisfying, you know, it comes full circle. So,
oh my God, for real. I am very surprised because some people, I had no idea they listened. I was like, what? Or I've gone to conventions where people are like, oh my God, are you Danielle Reynolds? Like, I recognize your voice. I'm like, my voice? Oh my God, help me now.
You do a good job. It's like very recognizable.
Yeah, it blows my mind. Like, this is the most consistent thing in gaming I've ever done, because I have every other week put out an episode since 2020 when this thing started, which blows my mind because, like, I've been doing this more efficiently than I have even game design. So
not many people could brag about that. And you know what? You have to do it forever now.
Oh, God. No, I'm hoping that this is a show that, like, Ludology could get passed off to someone else eventually someday. I think that would actually be my hope for the show, is that, like, it is a thing that continues to grow and continues to happen. Because, like, already I still have not repeated a game designer. Like, there has been new designers on every single episode, and I try so hard to make that a thing because there are so many designers out there. Like, no offense, I love a lot of the people that have been on here, and I've been asked many times, like, can I come back on the show? And I would love to, but right now I want to just, like, make sure that more and more different voices get heard.
You heard it here, folks. We're looking for a replacement for Danielle. It's not me.
Oh, wait, Amanda, you don't want to take this up? You don't want to keep doing what I do?
I'm about to make you the host again, so get ready.
Ah, nutter butters. Fine, I'll take the mic back and I'll take over my show again and continue on into a sixth season after this. Boo. I'm just kidding. No, I love this show. This is so much fun. I love this. Well, let's finish up this episode. But first, I normally close out with, like, what game do you wish we had designed? But instead, Amanda, because you have been listening and editing all these episodes, is there anything personally as a listener that you want to see in the next season that I should implement?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, especially with the idea of, like, if you potentially put some content on YouTube or whatever, you can get a little visual with certain things. But I love your question at the end about what game somebody would have liked to design if they, you know, were the designer of it. Something similar to that, like teaching an old game new mechanics. Like, I would love to hear somebody talk about, like, maybe a game that when they were learning to design, or a game they really love that they either added a house rule to or a mechanic to that, like, they use when they play it. And I know you've mentioned it before in some episodes where you're like, oh, I actually play this game this way. Like, I always think that's interesting to see, like, what people grew up with and what they did when they played, you know, older games or even newer games now. So I think that would be something cool. And then on the video content side of things, maybe some cute little challenges or picking designers' brains in different visual ways would be fun too. There's a lot you could do with that.
No, I think those are great suggestions. It is interesting when people bring up games in their, like, journey or whatever, when I ask how they got into designing. So, maybe I'll start mixing it up a little bit. Throw some other stuff in there. I like it.
And don't tell them before, because everyone's like, oh, like, I was getting ready for this question before I prepared. Now you can just be like, just kidding, new question, and yeah.
Oh my God. Well, you know, it's a good thing. They don't even need to come back on the show because I can't scare them away.
That's so true.
They can't come back anyway. It doesn't matter.
No, it's people who listen who are prepared to answer your question who have not been on the show.
Oh, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. You're the mean one. Let it be known.
Good cop, bad cop.
The great and powerful Oz. Sitting there.
Behind the curtain, behind the editing screen. Sorry.
Oh, no, you were so great. I really love working with you. And having you recap is always so fun. I know before I had you start doing it when I used to edit my own ones, I'd have a surprise friend who was on the media side do this. But I think it's nice having someone who's listened to every episode. And also, I mean, you've started doing a little more design yourself. You mentioned the Tabletop Mentorship Program. So it's like cool to see your evolution through like gaming, going in and out and like doing little pieces and stuff with people. So it's nice to have you to kind of be the person to bounce things off of.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And you're a good influence, I feel like, with the industry and everything. So it's been cool to get involved in different ways. So
yay. You heard it here first. I am a good influence.
Don't say that. Don't repeat
that. Yeah, right. No, I don't think it was the first time. I hope that it's been said more than this one time. But thank you so much to everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 110, the season 5 finale. So proud of us. And thank you so much, Amanda, for taking over as host and being the editor of this podcast and really just being an awesome friend and human. I really appreciate everything that you do. And for anyone who might be trying to find you, is there anywhere like on social media you want to be found?
I guess for gaming, I did end up getting Blue Sky. So my name there is A Riva Monsta, like A-R-I-V-A-M-O-N-S-T-A. Just, you know.
You're so cool.
Fun with my last. I couldn't just do my name. That's so boring. And so, like, if you look up my full name, you'll find, like, 7,000 in one of me. So that's just better. Anyway, happy to connect on there. I like to reshare things and just, like, see what people are doing and follow everybody and like all your cool stuff. So, yeah.
That's so funny. I mean, okay. In your defense, my website, DMR Creative Group, is literally my initials, Danielle Marie Reynolds, because I was in college and original, and that was like, I couldn't have DMR Designs because it was already taken. So like, you're cooler than me. And, you know, I have been your host, Danielle Marie Reynolds. And if you're looking to find me on social media, you can check me out on Instagram, on X, Blue Sky, under Token Gamer, and that's G-A-Y-M-E-R. This has been an awesome season. I have enjoyed all the guests that have been on the show and doing kind of the highlights, but there were so many other awesome games. We just had to pick a few to talk about. So please check it out and listen to the 6th season because we have a lot of cool stuff coming your way.
Get ready.
Get ready. And thank you for All Play, too, for sponsoring the season. Appreciate you. Still use your board game table on the daily. So good. So good. But yes, now for reals. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.